are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
been giving up a second thought about you now. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me, people, you gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people,
where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me why your life is?
What's with your life? Running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. I've missed you. I've been off a while. I was hoping to broadcast this past Monday, but I wasn't feeling well. I was in New Orleans last week for the Dr. Carl Holmes Executive Development Institute, where we work with firefighters and educate firefighters from across the country and literally around the world. Because we had two brothers from Ghana, West Africa, teaching them how to be chiefs of department, good company officers, good chief officers. And the success of the program speaks for itself, and it was tremendous, tremendous. I have a guest today, so I'm going to try to get through the announcements and so I can get to my guest, who's going to bring us some great information about the island country of Haiti. Once again, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives, timeforanawakening.com. Go to programs towards the end of the page, and as soon as you click on, right at the top is African Perspectives. Click on that, and then you can find our program, which I dated and titled, and thanks to my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku, who put some good programs on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday last week. And I thank him so much for doing that. Also on Mondays and Wednesdays from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones, the Black People Matrix, Monday and Wednesday. Also on Monday, 6 p.m. to 8, all times are going to give our Eastern times, is Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Right after that is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And I missed this program last night, but I hope it went off real well. And I got to get with Dr. Rogers, my good friend and good brother. And he's on every Tuesday from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, this evening, there's three programs here on Time for an Awakening. My program, The Black People Matrix, and Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 this evening. Revive. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right, Time for Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. From 8 p.m. on. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., that's right, it is not me, it is Sister POC and her program Revive from 11 a.m. to 1. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com.
It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. And if you're in the Atlanta area, you can go to the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk right across from the Medu bookstore, and they sell all kinds of good stuff. Believe me, I was in the Medu, in the Greenbrier Mall, I was in the Medu bookstore last week, right before I left, and have a lot of good products. So please check out WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimba, who just got back. We'll talk with him hopefully real soon about the trip and upcoming trips that he has. And, of course, you can go online to check out those trips that he has. He went to Ghana. He was in Ghana from May 22nd to June 4th, a great trip. And you can go online to AfricaForTheAfricans.org, or you can look at photos from previous trips at Facebook.com/Bomani, or you can look at videos from previous trips at YouTube.com/Bomani2007. He's going to South Africa November 22nd to December 2nd, and that's going to be going to Cape Town and Johannesburg. And then he's going to Ghana again in December 24th to January 4th, 2020. And you can check those trips out. So give him a call or look on his website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Shrine of the Black Madonna. They have everything you need right here in the West End, located on Abernathy. The number to call is 404-549-8676. And they're open Wednesday through Saturday, 12 to 7, Sunday from 1 to 3, and they have clothing, they have furniture, the red, black, and green shoes, and of course they got books. And they also, they have a class every Saturday, free and open to the public, Know Thyself, from 1:30 to 3:30, a multimedia presentation every Saturday. But if you can't make that, they also have the multimedia library, which you can purchase. That's right. Over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is, brothers and sisters, 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. Check that out. Like as I said, the Medu bookstore, located in the Greenbrier Mall, right across from the kiosk of We Buy Black. So check out the Medu bookstore. They'll have what you want. Give them a call and see if they have it before you go. 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. Right there in the Greenbrier Mall, the Medu bookstore. Another bookstore I promote, of course, is my good brother, Kazimde Ajamu, at the Black Dot. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, located in Lithonia, 404-519-8107. And believe me, there is light in the Black Dot. They also have the red, black, and green shoes, an array of them, and all kinds of, they have clothing, and of course, they have books. Cafe Ulu, its radio broadcast is tomorrow evening, Us Lifting Us. Ulu, Us Lifting Us, every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio, 9 p.m., the broadcast, 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789. Become a member of Ulu. Make a contribution. It's Us Lifting Us. It's an economic development cooperative. We pulled our money together and we now have Cafe Ulu here in the Atlanta area. That's right, on Sylvan Road, right off of Georgia Highway 166, right off of it. You get off there and bam, you're right there at Cafe Ulu. Okay? And, of course, we have coffee. We have African coffee. We have Cameroon, Tanzanian, Kenya, Ethiopia, where coffee began. We have all the kind of assortments of coffees. And everything that is sold at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. Everything. So check it out. We also have a vitality drink, Ambrosia, created by my good brother, Brother Novak Young. Ambrosia. It has alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, and chlorophyll. It has hibiscus. It has cinnamon, ginger, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. Delicious vitality drink. Akabin Institute, my good brother brought Yah and Baba Baruti. They have a school. They need help. They need your support. It's truly independent, educating my brothers and sisters to be warriors out here. Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Make your check and money order out to Akabin Institute. Mail it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. on PayPal or Cash App, go put in the email Yah with a cash sign, Yah, Y-A-A-M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, okay? And give your consistent donations if you can afford to do so. And, of course, Juneteenth Day. Juneteenth Day will be here this weekend. Juneteenth Day. We will broadcast next week, Wednesday, which is June 19th, you know, the date of Juneteenth Day. But the Juneteenth Day celebration follows the weekend that is closer to that day, and it's this weekend. And it is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with parades and all kind of good stuff. It is going to be by the Mercedes-Benz Stadium at the Home Depot Park. The Home Depot Park, I don't know what they really call it, but it starts on Friday and it ends on Sunday. It is something that you must attend. Please be supportive of Juneteenth Day. Brother Bob Johnson has been doing an outstanding job. And we will not broadcast from Juneteenth Day this Friday, but we will, I promise you, next year. I'm going to get involved and help my good brother to make sure that we have the best. Well, Juneteenth Day continues to grow and continues to be a vital celebration within our community. I will be talking about Juneteenth Day as that day approaches. In Yesay Sim, the book on the revolutionary thought, I'm going to read yesterday and today, but since I've been gone for quite a while, Friday I'm going to be going through these, because if you are like me, there are jewels. I mean, literally, there are jewels in the In Yesay Sim, believe me. You know, so I'm going to read today and yesterday and today's revolutionary thought. June 11th. Ancestral wisdom unraveled, retraced, revealed, and resurrected will promote the reacclimation and recension of our people in Nzanga Warfield. We must remember that music has always served as a positive, culturally enhancing function for Africans. Throughout our history, it calls us to perform ritual, festival, and ceremony, to celebrate our rites and to gather at our holy places to confirm and rejuvenate any neglected connection with our ancestors, guardian deities, and the Creator. It summons us to village meetings to decide communal issues and to courts to decide disagreements between individuals. When necessary, it even calls us as a community into war with others. We must remember that drums have always been at the center of our music. At the heart, they beat out the time that regulates the pulse of our constant movement toward equilibrium and perfection in spite of the disorder created around us by incomplete beings, Urugu. As timeless deities, the drums toll of our births, lives, deaths, cycles, victories, defeats, and lessons learned. The vibrations that their music gives off nurtures the communion of our community. They mark cadence during the marches, those who break from their enslavement made from town to town after victorious revolts. They roll down from our Maroon, Quilombo, and our outlying strongholds, announcing coming war and retaliation. They speak of universal rhythm, of balance, of justice, of order. We have never given them up because we know their power. Affirm, I listen to the words of the drum. Affirm, I listen to the words of the drum. June 12th. Today is my daughter's birthday, June 12th. My oldest daughter. It's a special day. Upon witnessing the love and admiration that the domesticated creature has for its owner, one would never guess at the history of fear and terrorism that brought the creature to its present state. Raz Jezreel. If Africans worked as hard on resolving their mental illness as they do on their physical ones, we would be well on our way out of this difficulty. Understanding this imbalanced approach to curing ourselves is only a matter of grasping the degree of difficulty, the amount of self-sacrifice and protracted energy which must be expended to achieve success for either. The former, curing our mental illness, requires serious, prolonged spiritual work and our historical study, while the latter, curing the physical, only requires the willingness to take Western or herbal medicines, adjust one's diet, single-mindedly focusing on self. Imagine the mental side rationalizing this imbalance, saying that a healthy temple automatically gives consciousness of self. Imagine a physically healthy but mental-sidal African nation. Affirm, I take on the greater challenges of warriorhood. Affirm, I take on the greater challenges of warriorhood. And basically what that means, I challenge the mind. Because once I free the mind, everything else follows. It's automatically, I'm going to do what's right physically. The mind. We have a guest. And I'm very happy to have this guest. I just met this sister over the phone. My good friend Jackie, who's with ASCAC, gave me a call and said, "You must meet this sister. This sister is doing great work in Haiti." And I was like, "Sure, let me give her a call." And in fact, I think she called me before I called her. And so I'm on the phone right now with Sister Gabriella Ariel. Is that how you pronounce your last name, Ariel?
Yes, Ariel.
All right. It is a pleasure and an honor. My sister, how are you today?
I'm doing good. The pleasure is mine, and it's an honor for me to be here today.
Well, I thank you for being with us, and I'm quite sure after our discussion, many people will know what is going on in Haiti, and especially in the area where you are and where you're working. You're not in Port-au-Prince, are you?
No, I am not in Port-au-Prince. I work in the north. And the northeast of Haiti, and originally from the north, from Cape Haitien, which is the second city.
Okay. How were you affected by the earthquake years ago, last decade? Were you affected by that tremendously?
I mean, the north was not really. We felt it, but unfortunately for me, I was in Port-au-Prince during the earthquake, but. Thank God I was covered. Nothing happened to me.
Good.
But I had the chance. I mean, I spent 3 nights sleeping on the street because there was no way for me to get back home. And from that Tuesday, and we turned home on Saturday morning.
I see. Yes. Tell us about your program. And is it pronounced Sanjay Haiti? Haitians
yes.
Helping themselves?
And Songe-IT, which means remember in Haiti, you know the story about Haiti, first black independent country back in 1803, how we kicked the French out of the country. And we were the pearl of the Antilles for the Europeans. And it seems like now that pearl is deep into the mud. And the reason when we call Songe-IT, like remember in Haiti, we want the world to remember what Haiti used to be and what it can be today. If we conjugate our efforts to really wash it off and shine, give that shine again, Haiti can regain his freedom, not that out of poverty. Because the way things are now, we are in very bad shape. And the resources are available. We want people to remember Haiti so Haitian can live and grow, prosper in Haiti with pride and dignity instead of trying to flee the country out of despair to catch other people's dreams so we can create our own dream within Haiti. That's why we call the organization Songe-IT. I started Songe-IT when I lived in Georgia in 2004, we became 501c3 in 2005, then NGO in Haiti in 2007. We have been working in Haiti since 2005.
Outstanding. I love to see you. I love your website. It looks very well. And for those who are listening, you can go to our website, sonjay-haiti.org, sonjay-haiti.org, and you see the beautiful children, boys and girls in their yellow and tan, and these are school children. But the programs, particularly you had three major programs that you emphasize education, economic development, and health promotion. Talk about education.
Yeah, we believe that education is power. And if we're talking about future leaders of Haiti, the way to go is by education, is through education. And that's the reason Songe Haiti, we focus on two groups. We focus on women and children. When we say children, we go up to the youth. Because without education, there's no way out. And we go to the rural villages because they don't have the same access to education. I mean, the gap between those who are educated in Port-au-Prince or Cape Haitien versus those who are living in rural villages in Haiti, where there is no electricity, no services at all. So people are by themselves. So what we do with education, we go to rural villages, identify kids of farmers who have potential and who really want to get out of the situation. So based on merit, we provide college scholarship. Most of the time, after high school, if they're lucky to get to high school, they stay in the village to just continue to help with the land and continue to do little commerce that cannot really help them break free out of poverty. So with our college sponsorship, we provide scholarship 4 to 5 years, and for technical school, it's 2 to 5 years, to those students where we pay the full year tuition until they graduate. So once those youth graduate from college, they committed to pay forward like 1 year, and we encourage them most of the time to go back to their communities to serve by providing them little stipends until they can get a real job and continue to support not just themselves, because once you save one of that youth, those are the ones going to support the entire family, not just, sometimes even the whole community. And besides the college sponsorship that we do, where you with 500 to 1,800, you cover the full tuition for college for 4 years. We also built a school. It was after the earthquake. We have 12 orphans that were displaced and moved to the rural village called Sima Limonade, which is about 12 kilometers from Cape Haitien. And then a year later, the kids were there and there was no school whatsoever in Sima. And I came back, and on September 2011, I did go to UNICEF and they donated a tent, as you see on the pictures on the website, and that's how we started the school. So over the years, every year we add one grade, and now we started with 30 children in 2011, and as of today, we have 268 children from pre-K to 7th grade, and we will start 8th grade on September 1st, Monday of September this year. So we basically, with 275, we have some sponsor in the U.S. with $275 a year, you provide for scholarship for the student, you provide for uniforms, books, school supplies, and we also have a school lunch program where you can contribute 50 cents per meal, where you provide one hot meal daily for those children. And I can tell you those are life-changing transformations. Because once you invest in the children, you help them to break that cycle of poverty.
Right, you're investing in the future.
To keep it just the way the education system is, education is not free in Haiti. Without that school, most of those children would not have an education. You have kids who started school at CIMA, Community School of Hope, at the age of 16. And our biggest challenge also, you find some of those kids are also doing labor. After school, they go fishing, also they go to doing other agricultural chores so they can find money to provide for the children. So this is very difficult. And in 2019, we believe we are living in a global village. Why can't someone in Haiti with solar energy even the government does not provide that infrastructure, we can set up computer lab. That's what we're trying to do, where we have a computer lab to offer technologies for those kids using. We are currently getting the infrastructure and talking to other friends in the U.S. and Montreal and also in Haiti. And we are fortunate to work with a group of youth graduating from the university, Beta d'Haïti. They are the one helping Songer Haïti implement. And the group is called Entre les Pages. They are the one helping us to really transition to technology to our primary school in Haiti, where those children, although they are living in a rural area without electricity, they can at least see, why cannot see when they see us and know what's going on in the United States. Educational materials using rechargeable projectors, rechargeable or speakers, and also all those other tools like books and stuff like that, so that they can have access. And eventually, we can have our children, if they want to continue beyond ninth grade, they can freelance for you all here, and they can have enough income to support themselves to go beyond a ninth grade education, and they can be more successful, and they can increase their chances to survive Haiti instead of taking the next boat to the U.S., to the Bahamas, or Turks and Caicos, and the Dominican Republic, where we are not welcome.
You're right. I hate that. I hate that. In fact, I went to Dominican Republic once. I will never go again because of their mistreatment of the Haitian people. You know, in fact, it's been said that they question dark skinned people who are Dominican. But if you cannot prove you are Dominican, then they will get you out of the country, even though you were born in Dominican Republic. So, yeah. But see, what Haiti needs is like what Africa needs is the same thing, to be able to provide jobs and some production for its people, you know. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the fact that in those rural areas in the Northeast where you're doing your work, there is no electricity. And to me, one program would be very vital is a solar program. Or a wind-powered program. You don't need electric wires because you know those can always come down very easily. You know.
But with solar energy, actually, we have other activities that's all we use. And Haiti is a tropical country. God bless us with the sun.
Yes.
More than 95% of the year. And even when it's raining, you know, as soon as you have just a little bit and you still have electricity.
Right.
So that there's no need not to push for that. But we know those rural areas, they don't have resources. It's kind of hard for them to invest. But this is really what Songer Haïti is pushing for our school to be completely wired. We have like solar energy. We've been talking to a couple people to see how they can help. We haven't been successful yet, but we know by God's grace we will get there. And our lab, you know, we can have all this. And eventually, why not a power grid for the villages?
Yes.
We work actually in 8 villages in the North and Northeast, and that we can sell that services to the local communities. This shouldn't be luxury, but in places like Haiti, this is luxury. And people can have access, kids can study and learn and grow, and not just the children. When you talk about education, we do a lot of training to women group as well.
Uh-huh.
You have women group doing, they don't really know how to promote their businesses. So to the program Claire Timonio, which means projecting the light on those children, we would like to open that with a mobile lab. We're looking for a donated van or donated pickup that can be equipped. So we have the mobile lab taken to the more rural villages to offer those programs, electricity, do projections, film, and have debate discussion about current events to those kids and educational materials. And we also can do like boot camp for women. They can come and learn about entrepreneurship, and also we can teach them how to really promote what they're doing on a website, because we have a lot of them doing knife craft and other products, but you know, they kind of limit it because it's not out there. Nobody know what's going on. You have a lot of little micro activities that you want to organize and then to connect to the bigger picture, but the level of organization is not there. So the goal of us, for us, to educate people is to show them what's out there, what is packaged, and how to promote the product. And by doing that, you have groups like you in the state that can share your knowledge and empower them to be more productive. And also, people know exactly what you see on CNN about Fongi-IT. It's not all that. We have people in spite of the poverty are thriving. People who are very quiet, who really want to get out of poverty, all they need is a little push, a little encouragement, and they can get on their feet and continue to fight.
Well, that's what's important, is to help people. But also, too, when you educate some people, because of the history of Haiti and its impoverishment, unfortunately, people are more looking at to educate and to leave, you know?
Yes.
And that's sad because, you know, that's a brain drain. We need people who have the knowledge and information to make the sacrifice to stay home and to help build, to make it better, to develop the infrastructure, to develop the electricity, the water, sewage systems, and all these things that are necessary. And these aren't, you know, luxury things. These are necessities for any community to thrive.
That's where we come from. Like for me, when I moved back to Haiti in 2006, I had a 3- and 4-year-old, and I was working then for the state of Georgia as a data manager. But I said, you know what? I don't want to be another missionary. I wanted to be home, at home with them, to show as a gesture to show solidarity. I don't want to be there to just educate those people, just not being present. My presence was very important to me. For me, from the get-go, I said, for me to show that solidarity in action, I have to be there. I said, if I can make it here, you can make it there too. It's not just telling them not to take the boat, telling them not to go, you know, illegally, but having me being in the state, sacrifice, do something. To me, this is not even this is a moral obligation and a divine commitment. And I'm happy where I am after all these years, because to me, it's love and action, not just telling them, don't go, don't do this, don't do that, you're not there. But I believe the same God who can bless you in the U.S., who can bless you in Europe, Asia, he's also in Haiti. Why can't he bless us? Why meet us right where we are? It's about uplifting consciousness. And it takes time to change that state mind, because when you look at the leadership in Haiti, people seem to have no hope. And sometimes you got the feeling so much needs to be done. You wonder, what am I doing here? Because you don't really see that change you're trying to influence. But when you see, you have those little moments. You have one young woman who didn't believe that she could be a nurse or she could be an administrative assistant. And now they're working. They have a paycheck every month. You see, this is really how you empower.
Yes.
And by being present, you show them you can make it here, and you try to instill that hope. You help them dream again. I think those are the type of things, using any type of tools that we can get our hands on here and transfer them over to them. I mean, those are things you can't really put a price tag on. And this is everything Fongi-IT is doing, is trying to use the resources, what we have learned here, and transfer those type of knowledge and capacity to the locals so they can continue on their own. It's not about handouts. It's about hands up.
That's right.
About hands up, it's education, it's capacity building. It's teaching them how to fish is one thing. If you teach them how to fish, you do not provide the necessary tools or the sustainable tools for them to be successful and profit from fishing. I mean, you're doing it halfway. So So you really have to take the time to nurture and develop that and make sure that they get it and they understand, and you exit out. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. You don't go to a community for 10, 20 years. You're doing the same thing. You're helping the same group of people. I don't believe this is helping. And most NGO has failed for countries like Haiti and Africa. It's like a business. You're in the business forever, and you're not trying to empower people so they can take ownership.
Right.
So by educating them, we're trying to transfer the capacity over and move back and let them own the community, because they are the one living there. They are the one. They have to be responsibilized. And that's exactly what we are doing.
That's what definitely needs to be done, because they need to see a future for themselves there.
Exactly.
You know, they need to see that their education and all that they're doing is preparing themselves for a future in Haiti, along with their children and children's children and so forth and so on, and having to stabilize, you know, Haiti, not just in the northern regions, but throughout the country of Haiti.
Throughout the country, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, we know the history, and it's ugly and it's sordid. It is a form of pride of 1804, the only successful revolt of our people against oppression, against an oppressor, kicking the French. And then, of course, the French has punished Haiti. A lot of people don't know that Haitians paid reparations to France, you know, for
Yes, I remember, and we are still paying the price.
Yes, you know, people don't understand that. But yet, European countries don't want to pay reparations. The United States don't want to pay reparations to us.
No.
You know? But see, the reality is, Sister Gabby, is that, you know, there are some people who are willing to help us, but in reality, we must help ourselves. That's why I like Sanjay Hahiti,
exactly.
Haitians helping themselves. You know, yes, you can give us some information and this and that, but
exactly.
Ultimately...
And it's not like people don't know. I mean, Haitians are very industrious.
Yes.
You see, sometimes you say people, they're selling just a little peanut. You wonder, what are they doing? I mean, how much do they expect? But, you know, Haitians are very pride. It's not like you are not the savior. Mm-hmm. We are not like waiting on a savior to come and do everything for us. We can do it ourselves, but we just need some coaching, some mentoring, and be there to push and make sure that, you know, we succeed, but not taking, most of the time we come with ideas that we have all the answers. And I believe it's very arrogant. We don't take the time to listen to them,
mm-hmm.
and know what they really need, what they want to transform their communities. And that's why most of the time we fail. Although we have goodwill, I mean, we really want to help and so forth, but we don't really give that chance to express themselves, to say, this is what I want for my community.
Yes.
Because when you look at Haiti, if you go to those rural villages, women carry all the load. I mean, they are the pillar of the society. You don't know where they learn business, but they know how to manage. I mean, they know how to commercialize
mm-hmm.
the agricultural production. And they know they are also planning director at the home level. They know, okay, this, based on that amount of money I have, I don't have much this year. Out of my 10 children, this is how many I can send to school and I can work for next year. They have to make that decision. Those are not people who've been to school. They had no PhD, no such things. But they know they are not stupid. But sometimes we don't really take the time to learn from them. By helping, it has to be like a win-win situation, and then you help them to really see the bigger picture, and then they can transform the villages. So that's really where we come into place while we're working with those villages in Haiti.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the people who are not in the cities, who are in the, you know, the mountains or in the rural areas, are neglected, you know, because a lot of focus is on the city. And of course, we know that Port-au-Prince is still recovering from the hurricane. I mean, excuse me, from the earthquake.
From the earthquake.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, but you know, they don't remember they leave, but when they have election, it's a vicious cycle. They remember they exist during election time. And once they are elected to power, they don't go back to those villages.
Right.
And this is something that is very frustrated. And through education is just to teach them how to vote. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
your future is at stake. So when we have a group of youth, that's why this summer we are trying to raise funds to do that camp where we would teach parents, we would teach teachers, as well as the students on how to. Those are civism. You have to tell them about that their responsibility toward the community, how to vote. It's not like people come all the time and take advantage of them. By doing the work, you try to, as I said, uplift the consciousness so they know whatever decision they make today will affect not just them, but the children, grand and grandchildren. They need to know all this through those every single action we are doing.
And see, what idealistically should happen is those that are in leadership, those that are in government, will look after the country itself, all of its people. Whatever monies that are donated or given should be utilized for developing infrastructure, make sure they have water systems, sewage systems, education, hospitals, all the things that are necessary for Haiti to function as a country and to be and to gain its independence. We know there have been ripoffs, especially the Clinton Foundation. I can't stand Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. I mean, I'm serious. I couldn't stand them from the very beginning, but I especially can't stand them for what they did to Haiti. From what I understand, it wasn't a few millions of dollars. It was almost $1 billion.
No, it was more than $1 billion, the reconstruction money. But the thing also, Brother Oshi, I can't stand them either. But we as Haitians have to take some responsibility as well. I think my brothers and sisters in Haiti, they failed to really help those that are less fortunate. If they didn't allow that to happen, it would not happen. The level of corruption, and that's why we are where we are today, that must be changed.
Yes.
We cannot continue like this, and then this is our country.
Yes.
We don't have, we don't have any, that's where we feel free. Like when I decided to move back, and my dad said I was crazy, I said, maybe, but you'll find a lot of Haitian diaspora really dying to go back. But because of all those lack of infrastructure, no hospital, and even if there's a clinic hospital, there's no supplies, no equipment. If you have a stroke, you're more likely to die. And some of them, if you're here, you don't want to go, but you cannot rebuild a country without the human power.
Right,
and you
cannot.
And you have a lot of educated Haitians in the diaspora, but they are afraid of their safety and so forth. But our political leaders, they contributed to all that disaster,
right.
The recovery, and not just that. And now, if you look at the news, we have a lot of protests. And, I mean, it's been going on since July of last year. And then last Sunday and until today in Port-au-Prince, they're still protesting for the Petro-Caribe, the money, $4.2 billion. And you cannot account for anything. They need to be accountable for the action. People mm-hmm. need to be punished. They need
yes.
to really, the money you spent money on that, I mean, there should be garnishment. The money, you don't see what you've done, you need to go justice. Justice has to make, but until we get to that point, and I am really sad of what's going on now, and we don't want another Rwanda, to happen in Haiti. But if we don't really take that seriously, you pray for us, Brother Oshi.
Oh, yes.
Bad. It's
yes.
gonna be really bad because they don't understand and they only think about the little interest. And you see, I don't really see what we're fighting for because no matter how wealthy you are, if you have a stroke, you might not have a chance to get on the next jet to Miami. I mean, we're on the same boat, but they are not thinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think the international community have been doing us wrong, but we have the complicity of our leaders that make Haiti stay the way it is today.
And that is so sad. That is pathetic. That the people who develop, even those who have left and gained education and other expertise, are willing to stay where they are as opposed to going back and to help Haiti rise. And a lot of that is the fear of what's going on and the corruption exactly. within the government. And I understand that. And, you know, but we're going to take a break. I want to take a break, you know, and then when we come back for the great break, we'll talk about economic development, the promotion of good health and so forth, and all the other good work that you're doing. I looked at some of the pictures you sent me, and the buildings are beautiful. Everything looks immaculate, clean. The children, all of it is just you're doing great work in that area.
It's about the dignity. You are building future leaders. We must raise the standard.
Yes.
It's not because they are poor, they cannot have. And I know we're going to the break. I mean, we built the first flush toilet. We have to hire someone to keep it clean every day.
Yes.
I don't want my children in the village to see a flush toilet when they go to camp. I mean, it costs a lot because you have to have generator to run that, but this is something you are building.
Right.
And to build that, to get to that level, you have to invest in that infrastructure. As they say, this is the CODB, is the cost of doing business. Our business is to develop future leaders. We need to set the tone so that they can, when they get out there, they would not be as corrupted as those leaders who are currently running the country.
Right. You know, like I said, everything, the buildings, the all around them, and it's, you know, everything looks beautiful. It's a good, it looks like it's a very good environment, you know, for education to take place, for learning to take place. And I didn't see too much of the agricultural, you know. I did see the goats and chickens, and we'll talk about that, you know, how you deal with, you know, training the young women to use that as currency and so forth. This to me, when Sister Jackie gave me your number to call you, this is much more than what I even fathom or expected. This is something tremendous. And you, my sister, Sister Gabby, you are the executive
director. You'll see more when you come down to visit.
I would love to. Believe me, I would love to. Yes. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more conversation with Sister Gabby from Sanjay, Haiti. Excuse me. I'm still recovering from the cola I have, so please forgive me for you and for listening audience. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us. And once again, please give us a call. You can talk with Sister Gabby at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I chose this song, We're a Winner, a song by a sister in Chicago, Sister Shavinduka. But it's a song that was written by Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions, because, sister, you are a winner. We'll be right back. You stay right here with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, my program is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays and Wednesdays, the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones. On Monday evenings from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Fridays, Time for an Awakening with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Fridays. And then on Saturdays, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on Sunday, once again, it's Time for an Awakening. And, of course, you can always join us at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We're talking today with Sister Gabby from Haiti with her program, Sanjay Haiti. And I played that song. I picked it out especially for you and what you're doing in Haiti. That song is sung by Sister Chavin Duca out of Chicago. It was written by Curtis Mayfield. We're a winner, because that's what you are, and keep that positive mindset. Because you couldn't do what you're doing if you did not have that positive mindset for all these years now. You know.
I see.
So how long has the program been in existence again? Since 06, you said? Oh, I'm sorry.
2005.
Outstanding. Yes. 13 years, you know.
Yes.
Talk to us about...
I moved back in 2006.
Okay, you moved back 2006. And talk to us about the health component that you have, because that is vitally important.
The health component is really more prevention. It's about education. So what we do, we have actually nutrition. We do a lot of, when there were cholera outbreak on November 2010, so we did a lot of training on water sanitation. We always do, and every other program we do, because if people are not healthy, they can't work.
Right.
So we basically teach about prevention of all the sexually transmitted disease, about, you know, clean sanitation and hygiene. Mm-hmm. And we also try to find, there's another group in New York called Hands Up for Haiti. We try not to reinvent the wheel based on the limited resources we have. We always reach out to partners who would like to help. So what we do with local clinics and hospitals. So we work with groups like Hands Up for Haiti. They come once or twice a year, depending on funding and number of medical bills, to do clinic at our schools. So what they do, once they do the clinic at our school, so they, if they find something that requires follow-up, we do have, you know, contract with local hospitals nearby. We transfer them to hospitals to follow up. Like on February 1st, we have two of our children with heart disease. So they are now currently being cared at Sacred Heart Hospital in Milo, and we provide transportation. We do now have a social worker who is doing a tremendous job to take them to the hospital to follow up and make sure our children at school are healthy. And we also, from our economic development program, have a program called Pathway to a Better Life, which is a cohort. And one component that is extremely important is the health promotion. So we do make sure that each member household has access to health care. So we hire a community health nurse to do the first aid at the community level. And if they require follow-up, we trust we have three hospitals we work with. we transfer them, and Songe Haiti reimburses the hospital for services rendered.
How far is the hospital?
The hospital, not that far. We have, I mean, the one that is the furthest from our port is about 10 kilometers.
Okay.
That's the furthest one. But as you understand, some hospitals only is outpatient, really. And they don't have all the equipment. Like, we have that emergency fund when we have our children who are really sick and we parents cannot really provide. And we do that, we come up with a GoFundMe or whatever activities. Mm-hmm. We reach out to our supporters to help us. We have the necessary health services. We used to do a lot of mobile clinic in the past, but we saw that it is not sustainable, and we try to use local clinics that are there, and if we have supplies, try to equip, reinforcing the capacity so they can provide services to the local. Why we do that? Because they are in Haiti, and we also welcome friends to come and help and make sure whatever is available, those clinics have access to them. Okay. So when they're not there, they can continue to do the follow-up. Because when the resources come, you come once a year, it helps. But if there's not an infrastructure in place for the people you see, like once a year to have follow-up depending on the diagnosis, we are not helping the situation. So that's why linkages to our health promotion program is very important to us. We focus a lot on education. And also the malnutrition program we have, we do growth monitoring in Baron. We have one nurse who we sponsor through college, actually from 10th grade to college. She is the one running that. So every Tuesday, we go and we make sure they have the RUTF peanut butter. It's something made by Medan Food for Kids, who we partner with, who provide the medical mamba. It's a peanut nutritious peanut butter to treat the child. One case of peanut butter is $26. So with that, we make sure that they are treated. Those are malnourished children from 6 months to 5 years old. Those are the ones we provide. But we found out as well, it's very frustrating. Sometimes you complete the treatment, and 2-3 months again,
they need it. Right, they need the treatment again. It comes back.
So
yeah.
We have. So we said, you know, I mean, I'm not just going to just rescue all those malnourished kids if we do not get to the core root of the problem.
Right.
Why are they malnourished is because their parents cannot take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do also, that's why we have the goat project and lack of protein, like chicken layers. We make sure we always raise money to support those parents with malnourished children. So they can, every day, the chicken lay eggs, at least that child can also have eggs. And we
right.
also, and it's really, our approach is very holistic, it's integrated. So the same program, we make sure that if they have a Lolo lab, we help you. We're talking about garden with small plants, family garden.
Right.
We make sure they have Lolo supplies and seeds and so forth. And we have an agronomist to go and follow up with them. We do the family garden, but we group. We have mothers' club, group of moms who are organized. They can take you a larger flat mm-hmm. instead of doing a lot of individual.
Do you have a lot of co-op gardens where the a number of families come together?
We have not a lot. We have more small like family gardens than co-op, but as of to our Free to a Better Life program, we will start one larger one with 45 families. It would be a big community garden.
Yes.
But we also support other established co-ops that are really investing in agriculture, but it depends on what funding is available, and we help sometimes with seed, sometimes with training, sometimes with, you know, agricultural tools and equipment. So those are those are already independent co-op that are already working, like Mopadep. I have a private business where I do dry food instead of planting the pineapple.
I'm sorry, what did you, Gabby, you said you have a private business where you do what? I didn't understand.
We do dry food.
Dry
pineapples and banana and coconut. Instead of us doing those type of plantations, so other co-ops that are really doing good work, and we subcontract with them if they have like 6 acres or more, and they plant, we help them advance them the sun, and when they are ready, we buy from them. We pick up from them.
Good.
So they have different type of arrangement based on, and every community is different. Some communities you can invest in gardening, and some other communities is more prone to livestock like goats or chickens and stuff like that.
In fact, in the livestock you have is mostly goats and chickens, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And so, of course, you can get milk from goats, and of course, you can get eggs.
But goat milk, this is something that requires more education. Culturally, they don't really use the goat milk, and they mainly use to eat, like for meat. But, and also, livestock in Haiti is the bank of Haitian poor. Most of the time, they don't want to use that. That's the biggest fight. They want to sell it to provide to other needs, like basic needs, like paying tuition for school, if there's a death in the family. So usually when you give out goats to our passing the gift program, you give a family 2 female goats, and they have a year to with a 2 offspring female goats, so we can transfer to someone else, even when they are multiplying.
Okay, so goats.
They would not eat the meat. They would sell it.
Right. So goats and chicken are also used as currency.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, chicken is the cheapest source of protein. And mm-hmm. we know with the malnutrition issues, we've been getting a lot of those. So they have lack of protein, and you can see, and our children at the school, if you don't, that those are deficiencies that really affect the intelligence and so forth. And that's one of the reasons we focus on those. And they are cheaper source of protein and easily accessible and low maintenance. And they don't require a lot of knowledge to do that. And for Christmas gift in our school, instead of buying all those toys, we donate chickens to our children.
Yeah, got to be practical. You got to be real. I mean, I understand as a child you want to get a toy. I understand that. But then again, you got to understand as you develop what the real needs of the community is, not for yourself but for all of us. For all of them, you got to learn to understand the issue of being community and of sharing and helping,
Yeah.
Yes, very, very important. Very important. With the health program, and I understand, the cholera issue was very big. In fact, it was alleged that the United Nations and help bring cholera into Haiti. Haiti has suffered tremendously since it gained its independence from France. The United States, Britain, and Spain ganged up on Haiti and pretty much put a stronghold on Haiti because, they didn't want another African uprising of African people throwing off a colonizer. They didn't want that. So they wanted to punish Haiti and because of what it has done. And our problem as people here in the United States, even though I'm not Haitian, but I want to support Haiti. And there are many, I've been able to talk to some Haitian people here, and they're, just as you said, they're very proud people and they want to go back to help. In fact, just recently in the airport, while I was in New Orleans, I met another Haitian. I was like, and they want to go back to help, but they're, the situation they feel is just not stable enough.
Yes, I live that every day. And my dad left Haiti. I was only 2 years old. So my dad has been here for 44 years. And then 7 years ago, he had a stroke and crippled now in a nursing home in Florida. But what's killing me the most is every time I go visit, he would say, are you going to let me die here? You know, you say most of his life has spent in the United States. I mean, he left Haiti, was only 25 years old. But he wants to go back, but unfortunately with his condition,
yeah.
I'm not able to take him back like that.
Right.
So many Haitians in that type of situation, they don't want to go, but the way things are going force them to stay here. But I always dare to say, I mean, by being away would not solve the problem. I mean, if you really want to influence the change, you have to be in.
That's right.
And that's the reason I decided to be in.
That's right.
I don't want to fool anyone to say it's easy, but it's not easy anywhere.
That's right.
And
you're
I
right.
mean, things happen here all the time as well, but I believe the media doesn't do places like Haiti justice.
Not at all.
Because you don't see it on social media, what's going on. So if there's a protest, one person died, and it's all over the place. It's like everyone. So I said, what would you do if all your life you've never seen electricity? Even water is luxury, portable
yeah.
water.
Yeah.
And then you just accept and you sort it in. I believe we got to the point sometimes I said, where are those people like Jean-Jacques Dessalines to set l'ouverture? I even told my people, you need to be mad. You're not supposed to be living like that. I think now we are too tolerant. We accept so much, and it's easy, and people think they can come. They come and make promises. They don't keep that.
Right, that's right.
There's still one in the country. They are the one everywhere. They speak louder than everyone else. But I don't think most Americans would survive Haiti. If you were to leave, wake up in the morning, don't know what you're going to feed your kids for an entire month because there's no job. There's no electricity.
Mm-hmm.
There's no portable water. You can't even have money to buy the little bowl to purify your water. I don't think you would accept that. Sometimes you have to be on those people's shoes and before you say those people are savage. I mean, most people would not accept that. But Haitian, I don't like the word resilient. And sometimes I say this too much to be resilient because you need to stand up for your rights. Just like Dessalines did. If he didn't stand up, Bookman didn't stand up, we would not be free today. So, I mean, by being, I think those are the motives. That's my motivation.
Yeah.
When I decided to put my house on the market and then say, I'm going to start over in Haiti because I believe Haiti needs me better. I'm still young. I have the stamina. I can work. I can be that voice. I can empower. So I said, instead of being mad and frustrated, just be part of the solution. I think we need more Haitians to show active solidarity.
I agree.
Because at the end of, there's no backup country.
Yeah.
My country is Haiti. I'm blessed to have that side in the United States. They give me the chance to go to college. I have the chance to get financial aid. I wouldn't be talking to you if my dad didn't think that wise for me to be in the United States to have a college education and take what I learned here back.
Yes.
But being here, thinking it's okay, but I have something that tied me forever to my homeland, and this is why I am there. I'm fighting. I might die tomorrow. Hey, I can die here too.
That's right.
That's really the way I see life, and I don't think my family is just too my... I have two children, 16 and 17 year old. Now I see my family is bigger than that. At least they
yeah.
have me, they have a dad. But those kids have no voice. I can share with you today what's going on with those minority children, what's going on with kids being able to attend school at 16. Being that voice has no price tag. And this is my passion, and this is what I'm motivated to do the rest of my life. And
well,
it won't change by fleeing the country.
Well, believe me, in the 12 years since your return, based upon what you have shown me, you have made a tremendous impact. You did not procrastinate one bit. You hit the ground running, and you have shown tremendous results.
Yeah, and that God covered me. I pray every morning, and I say, God, make me invisible. I go and do, man, I have a simple life. I mean, I'm happy. Well, mm-hmm. I am. I mean, mm-hmm. things happen, and I take it with all the good and bad. But this is life. We cannot run away from it. No matter where you go, whatever needs to happen will happen.
Yes.
You just need to use your judgment and keep a low profile and respect others and do what you are called to do. There's no more, no less. No more, no less.
Yes, and you are definitely doing your part, and I hope that you will continue to get the support that you need to help do your part in the area where a lot of times it is most neglected, you know, where people don't even think about, you know, the rural areas, the area, the hill areas and so forth. They don't think about it. They don't think, you know.
Yeah, because the same people like to stay on their comfort zone, and it's a challenge. You're talking about rural areas, and some places you go, you have to walk because the car cannot get up the mountain. You
right,
know what I
that's
mean?
That's right.
And yeah. some places you go, and then there's nothing. I mean, you're just there on the hut, and that's where you're going to sleep and using the wood to cook and stuff like that. And most people cannot really wash it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your mind has to be prepared to adjust to those type of environments.
Right.
I mean, this is part of the process.
Right.
If you really want to empower. So that's why you find most of those people working at the Bate in the Dominican Republic, because you get to the point and if there's no education, what we do a lot of education also on health promotion is family planning. It's easy for us here to judge how come they have no and then they keep on having kids. But maybe they don't know. They never heard someone, you know, telling them responsibility. This is what's available for them. You have to go to the clinic, but sometimes you have to walk miles to go to the clinic to get the free pills
right.
or to get an IUD and so forth. It's a problem also about access, but yet you can meet them where they are.
And that's what you have to do.
What needs to be done.
A lot of times you have to meet them where they are. That's why
exactly.
being more mobile, bringing things to them. You shouldn't expect them to come to you in the condition.
Exactly.
You need to go to them and to help them, you know, where they are. And that's what you have done. And your work is it speaks for itself. It really does. And I hope that people who are listening will go to
sonjeedash.org.
Go to that website. See the things that are being done in that part of Haiti. But more importantly, find a way to support it. Find a way to give donations. Find a way, and even better, if you can truly afford to, find a way to physically go there and help. You know, lend your expertise, you know, to what's going on, you know, and the issue will always be there. So don't worry about it. If you can't do it right now, if you can't do it next month or next year, it still goes on. So prepare to do it. Prepare yourself to go help. You know, I know just like your father, I don't want to be buried here in America, although I was born here in America. But I fell in love with Africa. I fell in love with Africans. In spite of all the madness, I love us. I love African people wherever we are, whether we're in Haiti, Jamaica, mm-hmm. Trinidad, Brazil, wherever we are, I love us as a people. And I pray for us, and I pray for our development of unity, because if we had the kind of functional unity globally, we could get ourselves out of this madness, out of this mess, you know, by supporting and working with one another, you know, by helping one another, you know, because we all should love for our brother and sister what we love for ourselves, you know, and obviously you do, because you're willing to do the work. you left a comfortable situation in the States to go back home to service the underprivileged, to go back home to service those who are really in the, it's particularly in the, once again, I'm reiterating to the rural areas, which is all the time, a lot of times neglected because people most focus on what's happening in the cities, you know, as opposed to what's going on in the rural areas, which need a lot of help because the infrastructure truly is not there, you know. And of course, what you're doing is helping with an economic development plan, utilizing the livestock, you know. Is there any other thing that can be done where they can have commerce? Is there anything?
That's what we do. We have a program called Kudakud Microcredit. Kudakud means helping each other spend. Well, we provide loans, and what we do now, we integrate all of this into one packet called The Pathway to a Better Life. It's a 2-year graduation program because we make sure that we start with a cohort of 100 people. With the pathway to a better life in Creole, it says Chime la vie mieux, is to help the ultra poor to move from point A to point B. So what we do with the program of pathway to a better life, we make sure that we identify, we do what you call a participatory wealth ranking to help you identify those who are really vulnerable into the villages. The reason we do the PWR, I learned that every communities you go, when you call a meeting for community leaders, you always see the same faces. Say, what's going on? Are those the only ones? I mean, are they the only shot in town? So what we do, we use the same community leaders to help us identify them by doing a mapping block by block of each house and who lives there and so forth. Once they do, we have 5 groupings. We have the wealthy, the less wealthy, the poor, the ultra poor, and so forth. And what we are in, but they don't know what we're doing. And once we're done, we select the ultra poor and the poor. And we go to the home. We have a lot of college students we work with who graduated from, so they are social workers. And also we have other trade and stuff like that. We go to the home to do the primary selection. It's to really assess and see what's going on inside the home where you sit, I mean, at the village to do the mapping on the floor. And when we go, we select, we have our checklist. We know those people are really poor, and we send them so high, and the supervisor goes to do the final selection. So once we identify that cohort, we smallest cohort we start is cohort of 100 people for a CLM, a Chime la vie mieux, or Pathway to a Better Life program. It's very intense because we have one social worker for 18 months assigned to 50 members. It's mainly women, but okay. We have some exception. Like we had a cohort of 100 we started on December. We have 7 men. Those men are widows, and they are the one taking care of the household.
Okay.
And they are the one, we train them, and they are part of the court. So for 18 months, each caseworker has 50 people. Every week they have to visit, because if you give them, they choose what type of enterprise, like commerce, and they are free to choose whatever commerce they think is good for them. We make sure they have the assets available. We take them to the market. We do training and give them, you know, house, you know, simulation. If I give you 1,000, what would you do? They go and come back and extend to you. Help them really do the math, do okay. The projection of the business, because we want you to succeed. And also help them create what you call village saving.
Or like a credit union, something like that.
Yes, exactly. So out of that, they can loan money. Like every week, it's like a revolving fund. Man, This is money they put in every week. And I did go to Home Depot last February, and I bought them some safe so they can keep their money safe. And we need, that's something I'm looking for, donation. Like any you know, medium-sized safe. So every week they contribute to the safe. And then someone, they sit down together, who can bow out of that. And then that money is used for them to do, to reinforce the businesses that we give them. And every week also they have a solidarity contribution they put on the safe, which is used only if someone from the group, we have a group of 25 women or men and women per group. If someone has a death in the family or any emergency, that fund is an emergency fund so they can get out of that. So what we do, we partner, we kind of let slow and fast climbers work together so to help each other stand. So the first 6 months of the CLM program, we provide a weekly cash stipend, which is $10 a week. And understand, for you, $10 a week is nothing. Those are people who haven't had zero.
Exactly.
Penny.
Exactly.
They haven't had a penny. But yeah, now every week they receive $10 for 6 months. So with that $10, they decided how much they want to contribute.
Okay.
So they started the saving before we even come up with the assets they needed to start their own business.
Okay.
And that kind of helped them to start getting up from where they were to where they are now. And we have so many stories that we can share, so many people you can meet to see where they were like 6 months ago and where they are now. And we tell them it's about tough love. You are not the only one in town. I'm here to support you for 18 months.
Okay, wow.
It's do or die.
Yes.
You
for many people, you're right, it is.
Benefit. And this is not alone with the CLM program. This is not alone we give you. We give you a way out of poverty. You don't try to improve your situation with all the help. It's not just giving you the assets. We have someone every week to sit with you for 30 to 45 minutes to troubleshoot what's going on, what can be done, and so forth. And you also have a weekly meeting with your group to help you. And if not, after 18 months, you would not graduate. Besides that, it's a full package. If you don't have a home, we help you to rehabilitate your home or to build your home. We provide some supplies. And you cannot graduate as a CLM if you have no latrine. I cannot come and ask people to give me money for you to build. You build your latrine. But yeah, I see you building your latrine. If you can, this is like a basic need. If you can eat every day, you can have a home, you have to think of that. You're not going to the bush. Then you cannot be eligible to graduate as a CLM member. So this is our economic development program is packaged into CLM because we have to have exit strategy as NGO, and this is an exit strategy program. So you graduate, then the same village, we can have another cohort. We have cohort of 100 and 200. So what is intent? Also, we make sure you have access to health care. We provide free health services to the household for those 18 months. If someone is ill or sick, we make sure the case managers take you, because for you to work as a case manager for the program, you have to know how to drive a motorcycle.
Oh.
You have to have at least 4 year college education, because this is you. We don't want you to only show sympathy. You have to be someone who can show empathy, help them troubleshoot the problem, find solution for them. That's why we require some skill set in order for you to accompany the members to succeed and get out of poverty. Basically, our economic development program is packaged into the CLM program, and we're about to start a new cohort of 150 by July 1st with funding from the IDB, International Development Bank, and we are also trying to write grants to find more, because most of our villages haven't had that. We want to cover the North and Northeast with that type of economic development program, which encompasses not just giving them money for the microloan and stuff. It's about changing the mindset, because the condition is not permanent. They need to know that. And, you know, behavior change takes time. So that's why it's very intense. to train them to know this is not acceptable. You cannot be living like that. You need to do more, and this is what it takes for you to get there. And you are not alone. I got your back. I'm going to help you.
That is great. That is great. Don't let them waddle in that.
No.
Pick
no.
them up. Yes, that is great. What is
but you do not succeed. I'm sorry. We have to move on to the next person because you are not the only one in town.
Right. Now, what other parts of Haiti, are they doing similar programs as yours that you are doing in the Northeast?
We have, for the CLM program, it's only two of us. It's Foncose. It's a Haitian NGO doing it in Saint-Gilles. But Foncose is mainly doing it in the Central Plateau, and we are working in the North and Northeast.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what about in the city?
No.
No. Okay. Well, good. It's like I said, is vitally important and necessary. Now, you do have a loan program. If somebody has a business plan and a good idea, there is some money that she mostly can get this loan up to, like, I think it is $600 or $1,000 at a very, very low interest.
At 1.5% interest.
That is low. Yes, that is low. And when is that? And that has to be.
And also, what we do also, we set up chicken farms from our economic development program. We set up small chicken farm, or we build the infrastructure, and we equip, and we make sure you have the chicken and feed. We pilot that with the Solidarity Group of Five for a full year. And last year, a couple years ago, we had training from Dr. Jackie from Kentucky University, who came for a week and trained our chicken farmers. And then once we do that, we give the group a contract. So, and we have two chicken farms in the Northeast, and we're trying to set up more for those communities. So they are wanting that themselves. So what we required on the contract is to keep it growing so other people can benefit from that as well. So I have one in Payetan. We transferred that over like a year ago with 1,000 chickens in the production. It's about 1,400 now. So we give them all the equipment. We give them the revolving fund to keep on buying. So what they do after the cycle, they sell the chicken and they do the inventory. We supervise that and how much, and they have money for the next cycle. They have to put 30% of the cost of the return on investment at the bank. I mean, that's the saving. So if something, they cannot come back to us because we exit out. This is your business. You have to make it. So we always don't do just that. We make sure we train them. They have a plan for the future, a business plan. And they always come to us. Sometimes they cannot find feed. They cannot find that. They ask us where to go. And we make sure we guide them through the process. But they are the one wanting that. It's right. The same we do for extremely poor village, Fayetan and Paulette. We set up two community restaurants. And as of January 1st, we've been running the community restaurants where people eat with 25 goods. It's less than 36 cents per meal. And I'm talking about balanced meal.
Good.
So we made sure that now, from January 1st, that would be through December 2001, we are doing a transition plan where some other people in the community can take over. When we build something for the community, this is not Songe IT, it's a community affair. It's a community business. So we train them. We have a consultant from Port-au-Prince who just did last week the feasibility study. And also after the assessment, he's also interviewing people and have the feel about the restaurant, what would we like to see happen. Because if we don't want to just close and leave that beautiful place there, we want the community to benefit from that. And then they would also identify those people within the community and also give them the business plan and so forth and all the tools they need to make it successful. So that's basically what we're doing now with the community restaurant. We still supervise, and we have the all the workers are from the community. As far as the day-to-day management, they are the one running it with supervision from us, and we still purchase the dried foods and take that to them every 2 weeks. But they're doing a fabulous job.
That's beautiful.
And that's really how we empower.
Yes.
You know, because you have to get to the level where you cannot really like be a toddler forever, where you can run on your own.
That's right.
You don't have someone babysitting you.
That's right. Get up off your knees.
Exactly.
You know, get up off your knees and start to walk and with your head up. You are definitely doing it, because that's a great thing with the restaurants, and that you're saying to them, hey, we want you to work this to be able to manage it. And so, you know, once we're gone, we know it is in good hands. It'll continue to function and function well for the people of that area. Outstanding.
Yes, it has to continue to flourish, because out of both West OS, we have 45, you know, people who can't even come up with 36 cents a day, otherwise they would starve to death. So the contract we give out to the local, they said, like, as long as the restaurant are operational and those people are alive, they have to have one hot meal daily.
Okay.
And we agree on that, because we don't want to let, you know, just donate. We give you all the infrastructure and everything for you making money, and they're not benefiting from that.
Right.
We don't do that. That's why we always go and supervise and sit and have a meal with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is fantastic. You know, I really applaud you for your tremendous effort in over 10 years of working with people and bringing them to the point where they are and helping them see. And I think the other beauty of it is you now have a group of children that who have seen what is possible with the program you have started. I can understand adults, you know, who are older and they're still kind of hesitant and so forth. But you have children who have grown up in this kind of situation, in this kind of environment, giving them hope and knowing that by working together, pulling the resources that they can do for themselves, they are truly Haitians helping themselves. And that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the name of our school, Sima Community School of Hope. That's helping Haitians help themselves. We're not going to, I mean, they can do it. They're not stupid. I mean, they're very, you know, they just need a little push. They just need to learn more, just like, you know, there's always room for improvement. And that's what we are making sure, reaching out to friends like you and see how we can really make that happen.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. That's what needs to be done, you know. And now, you know, the other thing that needs to be done to make a difference, is for those who are outside of Haiti, those who are friends of Haiti, those who are Haitians who are living in the States, those who believe in helping each other. You know, they need to donate, come up with plans to donate and to give some resources. Like I said, to me, if you can't give financial resources, there are other ways to give.
I mean, there are other ways that means more than financial. Your talents, I mean, your skills, your time, those are things you cannot put a price tag on. And I think for Haitian, you speak the language. Because when I have groups, we see welcome groups from the U.S., you have to hire, although it's good when you hire interpreters, I mean, to. Mm-hmm. But in medical setting, it's kind of hard, the terminology. You know, sometimes you lose in translation. But if you're Haitian, you speak Creole. I mean,
right.
That's your people. I mean, there's opportunity for you. I mean, there are opportunities for everyone. I think it's an opportunity for you to learn, to grow, to show solidarity. I mean, I think we owe that to humanity, not just to Haiti.
Yes.
I mean, if God bless you with so much and think it's good to, it's a way to pay forward. And this is so rewarding. Those are things I said before. You can put a price tag on. And I'm a living example of that.
Yes.
I mean, the peace you have once you're doing this type of work, is just priceless.
Yes, it is. And I think that those, you know, there's that saying, to whom much is given, much is required. And, and there's been many of us who have been truly blessed. You know, but I know here in America, the concept of America is not emphatic to really giving. They give lip service to giving. We live in a country that perpetuates and promotes individualism. I got to get mine, you know. And if I get mine, even if I got to take from you or trample on you to get mine, I'm going to do it. And if you didn't get yours, it's your fault because it's there to get. Yeah. And that kind of selfish mentality, unfortunately, breeds, you know, the kind of mean-spiritedness and evilness that many of the people have, unfortunately. But there are some of our people here, and there are some people here who understand, you know, humanity needs to work together to save and help humanity. And we as Africans, particularly, you know, Haitians are Africans. You know, yes. Jamaicans are
most
Africans.
Most of us are from Benin.
Right. That's, you know, what makes us different in the Caribbean is where did the boat from Africa stop off at, you know? And that's the only thing, you know. But I understand the pride that Haitian people have and other people in the Caribbean have for themselves. But that pride needs to also be about not just boasting, but about giving, about sharing information and knowledge and helping. You know, and to me, like I said, when you sent me the information and I began to look at it, I was so impressed. But more importantly, what you're doing for children, you know, showing them and leading by example, because they will do the same as they get older. And you're establishing a foundation whereby I would venture to say maybe in another generation or two, you know, particularly if they're infused with some finance, infused with some materials and so forth, they could be self-sustaining.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's a good possibility with the technology, the computer that you talked about, the computer lab or the IT, all of those things are possible, you know. The building of an infrastructure and energy with solar and wind energy to provide electricity, developing the sanitation system, a good water system, all of those things are possible, you know. But of course, there's always one step at a time, and meeting the people where they are, you know, and helping them where they are to develop the day-to-day things that they need to do to sustain themselves and to give themselves hope and they can see a future. That is fantastic.
Thank you. We are trying. We are just wheeling outlets, and that's what we are there to do. This is my life commitment. And I said, sometime when I come to the U.S., why are you saying no? I mean, my life is in Haiti. I'm just visiting.
Right.
And I'm there to stay. And I pray every day for people like you. And I didn't find friends like you who believe on my craziness, on that vision, I would not be where we are today. And it's just not me. I mean, we have so many others in Haiti and the U.S. and other places, supporting what we're doing, coming to show and just take the time to listen to us and what we're trying to accomplish and just be that voice. We are forever grateful to every one of them, all those women in Haiti who, and men, children and youth, the Outre Les Pages, always there to support. And you know, they are so professional, they are so involved. Actually, my background is computer information system, but I found a lot of talented young people in Haiti right out from the university. They're doing voiceover. We have a group of students at Cornell University try to help introduce some lessons and send them in English. And they just, you know, add it and do the voiceover so we can transfer that over to our people in Haiti for our teachers to know how to use the internet, how to use a virtual library. I mean, this is a digitalized world, and those resources we have, churches, schools, and all over, we can learn from them. We open to learn. And you don't really, I know some people might not be able to travel, to go, but from your desk, from your home, the comfort of your home, You can do a little trip. We want to be able to teach them English.
Yeah.
Because where we are in the Caribbean, I just don't see why French is not helping us a bit. I mean, I would understand, yeah, we speak Creole, but why are we speaking French where we are? It's not
right.
helping. But we can have people promote, and if you like a retired ESL English as a second language teacher, mm-hmm. maybe you have a little tool, we can translate that. I mean, we just need the tools to make that and that compute. I mean, we would be on fire this summer to really have one full month, 2 weeks for teachers and parents, and 2 weeks
wow.
from July 15th to August 16th to mm-hmm. just teach them about the new technology we would like to introduce and try to transition from the 8th grade to 6th grade. Having the money we spend on books, we would PDF, and we have a team who's there to help us to do that. But the biggest challenge, and you're talking about 300 children plus 40 volunteers and staff, I mean, to feed them, that's the challenge. And I believe in God, and He never let us down. But I know God would be using you and move you to the direction where you can donate to get the supplies we need and the resources to feed them and make sure at least we have fuel at night, because there's no solar energy for us yet. Those are, I mean, the top priorities. And school on September, we're looking for a sponsor for those kids, $275 a year, send a kid to school from pre-K to ninth grade. And also we have, with 50 cents, how much it costs to buy a Starbucks cup of coffee, but 50 cents will provide a meal for one child. $10 a week will feed that child, and for a year, out 10 months out of the year, $100 would provide a hot meal daily at the school for that child. We welcome your donation for Brother Oshi. Tell you about the website. We are 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Reach out and help. I mean, if you your advice, you can provide, we would be happy to receive. And if you have like donated tablets, donated Kindle that you're not using, you put on the side that we can refurbish, we have people there to help, because we need our teachers to be able to have that. We need our students to have the books there instead of buying books that tore down every week and take them to the school village.
Well, I'm going to meet with you before you leave for Haiti next week, and to develop, I will just like I announced some announcements, as you heard me at the beginning of the program, I will make an announcement every program to Sanjay Haiti, to the listeners, so they can be well aware, and I will direct them to the website and constantly reiterate the needs. So once again, if they cannot go, and probably may never go, may not want to go, whatever, but they can do something. And one thing they can do is make a financial contribution, whatever, how small or how large. Just like you said, the $275 a year will provide what?
Yes. Provide for tuition for a child from pre-K to ninth grade, tuition and with school uniforms for the year, school supplies and books, and emergency fund for hospital, you know, if they have to go to the doctor.
So that $275 for 1 year can assist that child through that 1 year of school. So if you do that for the amount of years, and imagine the impact that can make on those children there, that will help provide their schooling, which of course is not free, the uniforms, the food, nutrition, and so forth. It goes a long way to helping that child develop to be the person that they can be, and have the gain the confidence that they need, you know, to help brothers and sisters in Haiti out. It is tremendous, and I thank you. So
thank you.
So I got to get ready to go, because I got Brother Franklin Jones and his program. And so I want to thank you, Sister Gabby. I really do. I'm just moved by what you have done. And brothers and sisters, please go to the website and see for yourself. It is tremendous. I am impressed of all the things that she has been able to do, the people she has been able to get together, the cleanliness of the buildings, the children, how they look and so forth. It is tremendous. Go to the website. Anything you want to add before we close, Sister Gabby?
Yeah, said thank you to personally to you, to Jackie, and to everyone listening to that. I am very privileged to share with you the treasure of the work we are doing in Haiti. And we really move by your love and compassion, and your solidarity would help us reach more milestones. And without you, we would not be able to.
Well, thank you.
I rely on you, and together we can do it. And you would be pleased. You do. Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. May God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you. We end this program like in all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants and they can't do without and don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, till next time. Shimhotep, go in peace. Sante Sana, thank you. Bibi Fahodio, our victorious destiny. Thank you, brothers and sisters.